Good evening. I'd like to call the September 21st meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members, please. Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAtee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa will be a couple minutes late. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. I have one proclamation.
And Katrina Morris, if you'd like to join us from the Family Reading Partnership, come on up. Whereas the Family Reading Partnership has been committed to creating a culture of literacy for all members of our community and beyond for over 13 years, and whereas a critical component of literacy is early and pleasurable reading experiences between adults and children, and whereas it is extremely important for all parents and caregivers of young children to understand the huge educational benefits and intense happiness brought about by reading aloud to our children, and whereas Mem Fox, who will be visiting Ithaca on Sunday, October 3rd, is a world-renowned literacy expert and tireless proponent of reading aloud to children, and who has come all the way from Australia to share her reading magic with our community, now, therefore, I, Martha O. Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim October 3rd, 2010, as Mem Fox Day in Tompkins County, and urge and encourage all families to listen to Mem Fox's message as well as we all work together with the Family Reading Partnership to establish a culture of literacy in Tompkins County and beyond.
Thank you. We're very happy that the county has chosen to honor Mem Fox in this way, and hope that everyone can join us as she's going to give a free talk on Sunday, October 3rd, from 1 to 2 o'clock at Culp Auditorium. So hope you all can join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sounds great. Petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of the meeting for purposes of real estate negotiations. Other than that, no other special orders. Privilege of the floor from the public. I have two people signed up, and if anybody else is interested, they could come to the microphone after that. Greg Thomas first, and then Richard Flagel.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to come speak. I am the latest installment in the Human Services Coalition's Get to Know Your Local Human Service Agency presentation. My name is Greg Thomas. I'm the managing attorney of Tompkins Tioga Neighborhood Legal Services. We are the Ithaca office of what is now known as Legal Assistance of Western New York. We started as a branch office of the Elmira program. We merged with the other Finger Lakes area programs. So we're now part of a 70-attorney law office, and I'm not used to that. I still think of myself as half of a two-attorney law practice, the way we started out 31 years ago. We've been in the DeWitt building providing free legal services to low-income people in Tompkins County, as I said, for the last 31 years. Most of our cases involve public benefits of one kind or another, whether that's unemployment insurance, SSI, Medicaid, food stamps, the kinds of problems your constituents may run into when they need to apply for those benefit programs. We handle appeals at administrative hearings and sometimes take those appeals to court. We also focus on housing matters, particularly eviction defense and foreclosure defense, trying to keep people in their homes and out of the homeless shelter system if at all possible. We also do a little bit of pro se work. We're trying to increase volunteerism in the county. For years we've had volunteer attorneys working with us. We try to refer cases to them. We're also doing do-it-yourself divorce clinics now, and hopefully that'll be a little bit easier with no-fault divorce coming through in the near future. We've probably doubled the number of Social Security cases and unemployment cases that we've seen over the last couple of years, and seen a concurrent decrease in the number of public assistance, food stamp, and Medicaid cases. We're not sure why that is, but we're seeing more and more people who have had direct connections to the workforce who are now unemployed because of the recession, unemployment, disability, whatever those factors might be, and they're struggling to get by. As I said, we started as a two-attorney office in a 750-square-foot space in the DeWitt building. We've grown. We now have five staff attorneys and a staff paralegal. We're supported by four AmeriCorps members now. I'd like to thank this board for giving us, as part of the Human Services Funding Package, enough money for us to get that program started 6 years ago. We just started our third three-year term with the AmeriCorps Access to Justice Project. As I said, that funds four bodies in our office and helps us immensely with intake and outreach and generally reaching the community. Over the summer, we were up to 20 bodies in my office. This is remarkable. Most of those are volunteers, law student interns, undergrad interns, and the AmeriCorps people I mentioned. It's really impressive to see that many people crammed into our space, which has fortunately grown a bit. We're still in the DeWitt building. If you need to refer anyone to us, we're in the phone book. We're on the Internet. There's a website called lawhelp.com/New York that will give referrals to our program and any other programs like ours in the state. And mostly we just want to let you know that we're still here. We're not expecting any staff reductions or changes in what we do as a result of the various funding vagaries that are going on at the state and federal level. We remain optimistic, but cautiously so. And I guess I'd just like to invite any of you to stop by the DeWitt building. We're in the office complex area that used to be the auditorium of the high school building. We now take up the entire balcony area, crammed into a bunch of little cubicles without windows or air. And we now have a grand and glorious reception area and an interview room to meet with our clients on the first floor, where we actually have an office with windows. So stop by, visit us, or refer your constituents to us if they have any questions related to, as I said, housing emergencies and any sort of public benefits programs. And again, thank you for providing the funding to help us get that AmeriCorps program up and running. It's been a huge help, and it's now grown from two AmeriCorps members in the office 6 years ago. Now they're giving us four, and we're delighted to have them.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you.
Dick Slavel.
Thank you. My name is Dick Flairwell. I live in Lansing. I'm here to urge you to maintain the level of services and budget for the social agencies in the county. I've been involved with a few of them. I drove for Gadabout.
Sorry, Dick, could you speak up a little?
I'm sorry. I drove for Gadabout for 5 years, and I'm currently on the board. Frank, you know we would pick you up in Slaterville in a wheelchair, take you to the hospital, $2. $2. You don't have the $2? Don't worry about it. I mean, this is a real service. I've been involved with Loaves and Fishes. I worked there on Friday morning. We serve about 120 lunches on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and 120 dinners on Tuesday and Thursday. And what they do is amazing. It depends on what people give us. Like last Friday, we made eggplant parmesan. Somebody gave us a bunch of eggplant. And when I say we, I mean they. They don't let me cook. But I make a heck of a salad, I'll tell you. And another one I get involved with is Lifelong. It's a tremendous place. You have professors emeritus from Cornell teaching Hamlet, Barry Adams. Lou Colavito teaches one on Impressionism for museums. It's wonderful. It costs me $75, and I go all these courses and have a great time. I used to be on the board of Tompkins Learning Partners. They have volunteer tutors who teach people English. And not only teach people English, they help them to get their citizenship. They teach them to pass a citizenship test. They teach them to fill out applications for driver's licenses and jobs. They do a tremendous job. These are all things that people get involved in, and most of it is volunteers. So I urge you to give them the money. I know it's tough. Things are tough. Times are tough. But usually when times are tough, the poor people get it. With them, they're the ones that get it worse. I have a tremendous respect for all of you. I know how long it takes this job you do. and I respect you for it, but please consider maintaining the budget at this and don't cut the services. And I'm going to go home now and watch the game on watch this on TV. Thank you.
Thank you, Dick. I don't see anyone, any other members in the public. So legislator privileges on the floor. Jim, then Nathan.
I wanted to acknowledge the passing of Dave Cutting. When I first came on the city council in the mid-70s and urban renewal had wreaked havoc in downtown Ithaca, and a couple of mayors decided that the city needed to be the center of commerce in Tompkins County. Dave Cutting got busy with some of his friends and helped form the TCAD and was an instrumental person in many economic development activities in Tompkins County. And the county's going to miss that kind of leadership. So my sense was a lot of people have written about him and made comments, and I wanted to go on the record on the county legislature and thanking him and his family for all the work that he did for the county for many years.
Thank you very much, Jim. Nathan?
Yes, I had the pleasure of going to a conference 2 weekends ago in Los Angeles, California, on redistricting and immigration. And the redistricting portion of the conference, frankly, blew my mind. I actually have a completely different view of redistricting than I did before. All of those districts that look like snakes and salamanders and everything else actually there's a lot of method behind the madness. And so I'm completely blown away. We got presentations from the, I believe it's the Southern Justice Center and then also the Brennan Center at NYU. And we basically went through exercises in drawing districts and looking at things like communities of interest, keeping together communities, having representation for diversity in those districts. And it's completely opened my eyes to how complicated redistricting is. So as a result of that, I'd like to work with some, with Marcia or somebody to actually do a teach-in on what I learned on redistricting. It'd probably take me like an hour and a half or so. And I have PowerPoint slides, I have literature and all that stuff, and I could also get some more from the Brennan Center to talk about it. So I can go over like basic concepts like cracking and packing of districts, et cetera, and talk about those, and then also do an exercise in redistricting to kind of show how complicated it can be. It was an amazing experience, and I'm glad I was able to go. The immigration side was very interesting because a lot of people have concern about, or I'd say that, you know, what can the county really do? And there's actually a lot of things that counties can do when it comes to the immigration front. And we did get presentations from, what was the name of that organization? I can't remember the name. It's an immigration organization. And specifically talking about something that New York State isn't involved in yet, which is called secure communities. Anybody heard of that? It's basically this like that the ICE, which is and INS, they have developed a program. It's a computer database that basically once somebody's fingerprints are inside of the system, you know, whether it be for a misdemeanor all the way to a felony, it will basically check government computers and flag them for deportation. The intent when the Obama administration and others continue to support this, actually they plan on implementing it throughout the country by late 2011, I believe. The intent was to catch felons and violent criminals that were illegal immigrants. But actually what's happening in the places that it's been implemented in is that it's taking people with misdemeanors and actually splitting up families and causing a lot of havoc in communities, destroying the social fabric of many communities. And so there's a lot of data on that. And I'd like to actually bring this up in public safety because New York State hasn't implemented it yet. And there's the opportunity for for counties to opt out of this program if they choose to. And so it's something that we should definitely be aware of as we're moving forward to at least evaluate whether or not we want to participate in this program. It's already been implemented in Florida, Texas, Arizona, and California, and parts of Illinois. But New York is slated probably for next year in terms of getting this implemented. So I think it's at least worth a discussion. And so I'd like to put that on the agenda sometime soon. interested.
Thank you, Nathan. It sounds very interesting. I was going to say you could do a presentation at a legislature meeting about redistricting, but then when you said an hour and a half, I thought...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could also do a basic presentation on redistricting, yeah, with key concepts and everything. I mean, it really was just amazing. I was, my jaw was, like, open the entire time just going, are you... I had never thought of that before. Yeah. I mean, it was great.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Frank.
Thanks, Martha. I'd like to see Nathan's jaw open for the whole hour. I have a couple of announcements and a short report here to give you. First, I wanted to thank those of you that were able to make it to the watch fire last Friday night out at Lansing at Myers Point. I know Mike was there and Pat had expressed an interest, but she had a little setback that prevented her from coming. It was very well attended, and they very much appreciated the opportunity to be noticed. This is a comment more than anything else. If those of you that have been involved in cell towers and in broadband, I know Pat's going to pick this up on the broadband issue, many not-for-profits and many organizations are asking people to respond by email to certain requests. I think it's important to remind any organization that we're associated with. I heard one just as I was coming in here this afternoon that many of our constituents don't have access in that way. And it's a good idea to continue to include a mailing address as well as a telephone number, because not everyone has access to email. And some of our organizations, some of the ones we deal with even on a day-to-day basis, are only offering responses being accepted by email. That's the consumer concern. Staying on the consumer concern, by now you know that the PSC approved the rate increases for NYSEG and Iberdrola. I would urge you to pull out your bill and look at the SBU portion of your bill, as well as the portion that's going for to NYSERDA. Those are both growing, and we don't get any direct benefit from those. Your ratepayer doesn't get any direct benefit from a lot of those unless they participate in one of the programs that are sponsored by the indirect taxes that those provide and that those charge. But the rate increase was not needed, and it's a real kick in the teeth to anybody who's paying taxes, to be candid about it. It's going to be severe. This is for Peter's benefit. Peter, Controller DiNapoli, I'm sure you saw the report signed over the weekend, signed off on the VLTs. Gentry is going to be the provider, and they're already ready to install something like 1,400 of them at the aqueduct. And that'll start the money flowing into the horse industry that some of us have been very interested in. Those were approved, and the governor signed it some time ago. Two more, Martha, bear with me. A couple of weeks ago, we had an opportunity to participate in the report that was presented at NYSAC last Friday on behalf of agriculture in the state. And the part that I was participating in directly was the part on equine. And you may recall that there are pieces of it that what we found out was that there are just too many pieces that were missed. Viniculture, crops, and several others, equine as well. The report was presented. And we are going to have yet another meeting. Pat, I'll be calling you about going, because there will be a supplemental report to the one that we've already done, just to make everyone in the state aware of how important agriculture is and how many people are employed by it. Lastly, this Saturday at the B lot at Cornell. We're going to be hosting 19 different representatives from 19 different bus systems throughout the state. It's the bus rodeo is being held here this year. It's a competition on driving, and this is the first year that there will also be a competition on the mechanical ability of some of these to troubleshoot some of the engine problems. This is a setup. They purposely sabotage some of the engines and some of the buses, so these folks have to find out what the problems are. And the winners of these go to a national competition. TCAT has been successful in participating in this in the past, and we've actually won one or two of the events. So if for some reason you can't make it to the Cornell football game and you want to stop over at B Lot by the Veterinary College, this will be going on Saturday. There's a press release that went out today, and it's probably going to be hitting the media, if it hasn't already, by tonight and probably tomorrow. But you're all welcome if you'd like to come. The official kickoff is 11 o'clock, and it'll run most of the afternoon. And there's a dinner in the evening, but the look to see you there. And if you have a CDL, like I think Pam McAsee has a CDL, you're going to be two of them?
Okay.
Pam has a group. Pardon me?
One for each hand.
Pam will be driving, and be good to come and watch that.
Do they do wheelies?
Actually, they could probably do that with the trolley. Thank you. Thanks, Martha.
You bet. Pam and Nathan.
I just wanted to follow up on Frank's comments on the increase in utility rates. One of the biggest problems we have in the state in terms of attracting and developing business is that we have the second highest utility rates in the country. It is, and they just went up. So it is really a negative in terms of trying to attract business to our state. And I think that we need to rethink some of this, and perhaps we should be coming up with some renewable energy to help our businesses ease the cost of doing business. The other item I wanted to raise was the garbage transport truck issue, the issue that I've raised pretty much over the last 5 years. But it is very exciting because I'm hearing from constituents that, in fact, the number of garbage trucks has gone down dramatically. And this is exactly what we wanted to happen. The state did say to us that they expected that 80% of the garbage transport trucks that are not doing business in this county but are just using our roads to travel through will be back on the interstate highways again. And I would like, part of the reason I'm bringing this up is that I want to hear from people out there in TV land to let me know if in fact this is happening in your area, because that's what I depend on to get some sense if it's actually working. But everything I've heard so far is that it really is having impact, which I think is a very exciting thing for many people who live along our highways in the county.
Thank you, Pam. Nathan, again.
Yeah, going back on these NYSEG rate increases, so I was looking in the paper, and it was saying how that like electricity companies customers would see like a $2 instant jump a month on their costs, and then a $6.50 increase in natural gas per month, right? So that's like $8.50. So if you multiply that by 12, that's $102 over the course of the year. If you were to grant every single request that's in this OTR book, right, it would be a total increase for the for a $100,000 home of $78. And so just to put that in perspective, this rate increase is just absolutely ridiculous. And it's sad it's happening. And it's only one of 3 years of increases that are bound to happen. And even if you were to do just the 5% goal, that rate increase is still 2.5 times that amount. So anyway.
Thank you, Nathan. Sobering. Mike.
we're all troubled by the increase in our, what we're going to have to contribute to the pensions for our employees, 16.3% increase on payroll. We're talking about it in our budget committee. One good thing I recently read was that of all the states, and they're all suffering from their pension losses from the stock market and other things, there are only four states with the pension systems that are fully funded, and New York happens to be one of those, so I think that's good news. However, the cost, as we know, is huge to keep that fully funded the way it is after what I think our county administrator told us was a 30% loss from the stock market decline last year. The problem is, if we continue to pay those kinds of things in health insurance, is how we would face that if the New York State proceeds with what Governor Patterson and the state Senate would like to see happen, and that, of course, is the tax cap for localities, not for the state, but for localities. And I know we have a committee that's working on that. I don't mean to step on that because I know they're giving it some real thought. But if our localities, our school districts, our cities and villages and towns are hamstrung as to how they can raise the funds necessary to provide services without a corresponding relief of the huge costs that the state shift to us, particularly Medicaid. I mean, we basically are become Medicaid service organizations, counties. What will our roads look like? How will we be able to support our sheriff's deputies out there in the cars? How will we be able to inspect our restaurants or provide for people and families and health clinics and other things? I think this is very, very serious business, and I think that I know our organization of counties has been out there, and I hope that you'll be reporting on that, Martha, tonight. But it's something that needs to give us all pause and all of our constituents, because what's a bad situation could be made very bad.
Absolutely. Anyone else? Brian?
Just real quickly, and I'm glad you mentioned that about Martha giving a report, because one part of that I would really like to know, and I was reading through the some of the material last night, was this cap. New York City is exempt from it, so we're basically talking about upstate New York.
Yeah, that's what I read. I read that before.
I did read that, so I'll be anxious to hear. what that's all about, and I just want to point out something that Pat's been sitting over there with her arm up patiently for most of the meeting there, and no one's called.
Thank you, Brian. Raise your left hand if you want to speak. How about that? Because I'm trying to have trouble with what the default is right now. So, thank you, Brian. Lesson, and then Peter.
I just want to pick up on something Nathan started to talk about the immigration issues, and although there's no adopted program yet in New York State, there are raids that are happening. There are families that are being destroyed and separated. There's a lot that's going on with immigration. If you hadn't read it in the papers just yet, this Saturday, the 25th, there's a celebrating immigration event on the Commons, sponsored by the Ithaca Asian American Association and the Latino Civic Association. Both of these groups recognize just how much immigration issues affect their communities. The festivities begin, I think, at 6 p.m. on the Commons and continue with the Latino Civic Association. Some more activities, the Women's Community Building at 7:30 that evening. So it's an evening of celebrating immigration, some of the issues we face, and some of the good things about being immigrants in this country. So lots of stuff to do. It's not just a bunch of speaking. It's performances and food and so on and so forth. I also want to let everyone know that on Saturday, October 2nd, as part of the Ithaca Apple Harvest Festival sponsored by the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, it's the First People's Festival, which I think is a big deal, on the Commons. It's actually at DeWitt Park, October 2nd, from 10 to 6:30. I don't know, not in my time of being here, maybe some of you have been here longer than me now, of a time when we have had a celebration of our Native American community in downtown Ithaca. So I think this is really a big deal. It will be at DeWitt Park, complete again with performances by some renowned Native American performers, October 2nd, 10 to 6:30 p.m., DeWitt Park, and it is a part of the Downtown Ithaca Alliance Apple Harvest Festival, which will run the 1st, the 2nd, and the 3rd in downtown Ithaca. Just wanted to share.
Thank you, Leslie. Peter.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions that come up out of the conversation I've been listening to, and then a statement or a comment of my own. So let me try with the questions first. Because I'm really asking someone not here necessarily, but some of you who know to tell me about this. One is with the rate increase. I find that very hard to understand. I assume that the Public Service Commission looks at what they're paying for things and what their balance sheet looks like and puts on a reasonable profit, and that's what the answer is. And I gather, I mean, you certainly can't make people sell power for less than it costs them to produce, so I really don't understand that. And the other thing is, I am equally mystified at why it is that New York is second from the highest, because it was my understanding these days that natural gas and electricity and gas are like commodities today. You can see what the price is every day of a megawatt of power in the paper, and what you could buy a future on it to see what the price is going to be 6 months from now. And there's a number. And I don't really understand, you know, all over the country people use steel, or at least they used to, and they all pay the same price for it. It's a commodity. So I'm totally confused by how that happens. So if someone knows something about that, I'd appreciate hearing it. That's one question. The second question.
Well, let's see. Does anybody want to take a stab at that? Not that we have any experts here, but Frank?
Peter, part of what's driving the cost is it isn't just the cost of the commodity itself. It's the add-ons that are on your bill. That makes the price per kilowatt hour even more expensive, because if you break your bill down, and they have, they've even identified it's about 89 cents to produce your bill. The other concern, too, is that you pay for a month's delivery charge and also access charge. I don't know what it is on your bill, but it's about $15 on mine. Whether or not you're plugged in or not, just for the privilege of the line running there, you're paying for that access. If you decide not to use it for that period of time, you still get billed as if you had. What else is driving the cost? Unfortunately, it's been one of my complaints for the last, and I wish Karen, not a slight to Kathy or Michelle, Karen was pretty helpful in the letters that I've written to the PSC. One of the things that are driving the expense is the cost of maintenance, or lack thereof. A couple of years ago, you may remember when the power went out, it was out for 4 or 5 days across the 10 different parts of the county. It was because the NYSEG at that time, and that was the time that they were transitioning to Iberdrola, had not maintained the lines. Their maintenance program was, if there was an emergency, that's when they would also reinstall better stuff, lines or whatever. They cut their crews down to bare bones. We used to have quite an installation here of maintenance people up off Route 13. They don't exist anymore. They've trimmed them down to near nothing. both on the electric side and the gas side. Part of what my complaint is that as part of the purchase, when the PSC was considering the purchase, Iberdrola was supposed to come up with a self-policing plan to replace some of these maintenance problems. Never happened. And that's why I've been so adamant. How can you possibly ask for a rate increase when you haven't complied with what you agreed to when you bought the company?
Okay.
That's part of what's driving the cost.
And then I heard, I don't know if this is right, I heard on the radio that there hasn't been an increase in 10 years.
That's not true.
All right. So we don't know. All right. Maybe we can find, an actual expert. So what's your next question?
And my next question is about agriculture, a subject that I'm even less understanding of than power charges. But I've heard a couple of statements frequently. One is that I heard one statement that agriculture is our New York's biggest export. And then I heard another statement someplace that says that agriculture is New York's biggest industry, which I found surprising. And other people have told me that those statements are utterly false. And someone showed me a list of the exports of New York State, and it turned out that agriculture wasn't even on the list. They were the first 10. It would be nice to see some, those are very, very disparate statements, and I'm just curious how both of those could be correct.
Let me direct you. Maybe TCAD could help you on both questions. Those are issues that they, certainly power is something where they work with businesses when a business is considering locating here or expanding. So maybe Michael Stamm could help you out with the power issue, and I think I know I've heard Martha Armstrong talk about the second issue. So maybe that's a phone call you could make and
okay,
come back
Monica
to us.
Roth.
And Monica Roth, obviously for agriculture. Thanks, Carol.
Okay, and my third statement is a statement. I've just come back from Syracuse. I was a meeting of the New York State Democratic Party in Syracuse. And I'm an officer in that organization. And there was a lot of talk, it was all political talk, about the elections and gearing up for the elections. And believe it or not, they think our candidates are far superior to the Republicans, but I guess that comes as a surprise to no one. But the part that concerns me is there was some discussion of the tax cap. And indeed, I was privileged to have a discussion with the chair of the state New York State Democratic Committee. And I'm telling you, gung-ho about the tax cap. And I passionately made our point, and there was very little interest in it. I don't understand it, but it does seem to me to be a lot more serious a danger than I think a lot of people think. That's not a happy report, but that's what I heard.
Yes, and I agree with you. And I could report on this now or maybe during my report. Barbara's up next, but it's serious. Yeah, I agree that you're right about that. Anyone else? Legislative privilege. All right, thank you. Barb Ekstrom, the Solid Waste Division. Welcome.
Hey, Kevin, you might have to focus the projector. It's out of focus.
Okay, so we have a very short amount of time to try to cover cover quite a bit. Jonathan and I are here today to talk about the future of recycling in Tompkins County and bring you up to date with respect to where we stand in the procurement and agreement process that we've been working on with the review team as well as with the committee for the past 6.5 months. So basically what we're going to talk to you about today is the fact that we're ready to recommend a preferred vendor and that this five-year contract will not only increase the amount of recyclables that we're planning to process, but we'll save a lot of money, both in terms of the capital and operating costs. Okay. Real briefly, the county has owned the recycling facility since 1993, and a decision was made by the legislature and was the basis for our 20-year solid waste plan that we would contract with the private sector for operations, that being processing and selling our recyclable materials, as well as loading garbage for shipment to a nearby landfill. And those functions would be done in the same building to save us a lot of money in moving forward with the state's plan. So basically, in 2001, we signed a 10-year contract, and that was our second contract. Our first one, very few of you were actually here at the time. Frank was here. I'm not sure if Dooley was here, in 1993 with another company called New England Crink. Oops, we're not there yet. Just let me back up. Okay, so what Jonathan is going to do is he's going to just give you a really quick update of where we are in the process. I'm going to talk about the functions at the new recycling center and let you know where we're going from here. And so why don't we start with that?
Okay.
There is a handout, by the way.
Yeah, we should all have the handout, which is like 2 or 3 pages. Well, actually, it's 4 or 5, I take it back. And I'm going to start out with basically reviewing what's on the first page, but it's basically the history of where we are and how we got to and the where we are now in terms of the Recycling and Solid Waste Center agreement that we're working on. As Barb mentioned, we currently have a 10-year agreement for operations of the Recycling and Solid Waste Center. It ends in February 2003. We're going to have to...
In
February 2011, which is obviously coming up. As Barb has mentioned, the facility is almost 20 years old now. Some of the equipment is antiquated. It was built when there was less traffic, fewer materials. It really needs significant updating, so it's not just a matter of renewing. The F&I committee authorized the Solid Waste Division to seek proposals for someone to operate and make the upgrades to the facility. We made a draft proposal, then we got comments on the draft, then we issued a final proposal in October 2009. We got back 6 proposals from 4 different companies. Over the past several months since October 2009, we've been reviewing those proposals. And as Barb says, we are prepared to recommend one, which is by FCR Recycling. It has the lowest capital and operating costs, and it'll have the greatest potential for waste diversion, just meaning more recycling, more reuse. One of the probably the most significant thing about this, and maybe the most important thing, is that overall, the costs, there will be cost savings and more waste reduction. And probably the biggest thing is that under the new agreement, we'll have less debt service than we currently have. And the current debt service on the current facility will be retired by 2014, which means the overall cost of the program will be less than it is now, which means that either we can add new programs or we can reduce the solid waste fee. But if you think about it, there's very few programs where services are going to be increasing, and when we look 4 and 5 years in the future, prices are going to be down because the capital cost is low. So overall, the outlook is really good as opposed to many other programs. With this new contract and with the less debt involved and the retirement of the current debt, the future is really good for solid waste. We have negotiated the most significant terms of the contract. What it will involve is dramatic improvements to the facility, both inside and outside. It's going to be safer and more efficient for the public access. There'll be significant improvements to the drop-off area and the contact with the public. And the agreement contains several different methods for handling the different types of materials, each of which requires different equipment, different setup within the facility, different prices and revenue structures, and Barbara will go over that. But I think the one thing is that it's moving towards more recycling at a lower cost over time.
I'm going to talk about all of that in about 2 minutes. So basically, there are six functions that are articulated on one piece of paper. I'm going to go over them really quickly. The first is we're going to be able to do what most of the country is now doing, which is called single-stream recycling. Both your paper and your containers and anything else we add are going to be able to go in one bin. Okay? Those materials will then be brought to the recycling facility. And these are primarily residential materials. They're going to be brought to our facility and then shipped to the Ontario County recycling facility that FCR Recycling owns. By the way, FCR stands for Fairfield County Redemption, and the company started many, many years ago and have about 17 facilities in the country. Their office is based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. That's just a quick picture right there of all the contraptions and conveyors and equipment that they have. We did ask for proposals to do the recycling of single stream recycling at our facility. It was a very, very expensive proposition because we don't generate enough recyclables here to warrant that. But I want to mention there are reductions in the collection cost that will be incurred over time with the all-in-one recycling, which is very, very popular and accepted throughout the country. The second and one of the most important items is what we're going to do about commercial recycling. That means what happens in businesses of all sizes, including, say, Cornell or Ithaca College, as well as larger businesses. We're going to be receiving loads that contain high fiber, and by that I mean mixed paper types in those loads. They're going to be processed at our recycling center. So only the single stream residential mix, which is really only about a third of the materials that we're going to get in the county. These materials will be shipped directly to market from our facility. We're going to be paying less per ton for that service, and it will generate a much higher revenue than the single stream recyclables just by nature of the fact that paper receives very high revenue. The third item is called dump and bale. It's just a term that's known in the industry. That's when already pre-sorted loads of, say, cardboard or paper that are, you know, any type of high-grade paper are brought in, say, by a NYSEG, let's hope, or any other larger entities, and we'll be receiving a very low cost to process those. We'll get a premium price. You know, right now it's hovering around $200 a ton, whereas the other materials are you know, $40, $50 a ton for those loads. We'll be able to compete with a lot of the shredding companies that are currently taking material from this county and bringing it to another facility. And Challenge is now stepping up to the plate to help do that kind of work in the community and the county. This is a very exciting proposition as well. The other one, which is a little bit more complicated to understand, and has taken a lot of work to pull together, is what we call waste diversion. What that means is we're going to be separating specific materials for recycling and reuse. That involves a manual inspection of the loads. Large items will be pulled off the floor for either reuse or for recycling. We're going to have a sort line with that. And so, for example, I'm really targeting the construction stream. There are lots of markets for these materials now. Clean wood, concrete shingles, of course, scrap metal, rigid plastics, anything you basically buy at Target that's a hard plastic that typically breaks has a good market for that. We're talking about furniture to the reuse center, carpets, and many more items. The next item, so that's a new item as well as the two above. Waste transfer, you know about. Garbage is loaded onto trailers and hauled to a landfill. This contractor will only load the stuff, but it will be hauled and disposed through an existing contract that we have that will be up for renewal next year as well. Finally, lots of changes to the drop-off center, all for the better. Improved safety and public access for residents. There'll be more covered bays for additional materials, expanded parking areas, improved signs. We're working on a site plan right now that is really good, and the facilities committee, as well as Dave McKenna, has actually been real involved in giving us some really good ideas there. And the most important thing is we're going to be separating small commercial and large commercial traffic from residential traffic. We see about 155,000 vehicles a year of all different shapes and sizes. Probably 65% now are residents that come to our facility. So that is basically, in a nutshell, the gist of this. Lots of economic analysis has gone into this, lots of projections. I will tell you that if my projections with my staff and others are correct, we're going to be doubling the amount of recyclables that we're going to handle, and our costs are going to go down 8 to 10 times. And the only ifs there are what the commodity prices will be, and the ability for the local, well, that's not even an F. The incentives are all there to bring in a lot more tonnage at a much lower price. And quite frankly, I'm delighted to be sharing this with you. It's a lot of information for you to grasp at one time. If you have any questions on any of this, feel free to talk to a member of the Facilities Committee or myself, because this is an educational process. And Jonathan's going to talk about the next steps. There's no voting on any of this tonight, and he'll go over where we're going from here.
Okay. As I mentioned, the F&I Committee has authorized us to finalize or get together a service agreement or contract with the preferred vendor. These things are, they're not a few pages. They're quite detailed, involve quite a lot of time, but we expect that we'll have something complete before the end of the year. At that time, we will bring a resolution to the board, after going through the F&I committee, obviously, to authorize the county administrator to enter into the contract. The company will come and do a presentation. They'll show both the inside and the outside, the changes that are going to be made, both to the service area, the new equipment, and everything like that, so that everybody will have a good understanding of what they're voting on. And because the new contract will begin in February, and we want them to be able to order equipment, et cetera, to be able to get set and go at the beginning of the contract, we want to have this finalized before the end of the year, and that should give time to pretty much set us up to be ready when this current contract ends.
There's a transition process that's going to take place. I'm expecting that we'll be full board in August. The facility will still be open to receive materials, and there'll be a temporary location. The company is actually owned by Casella Waste, and they have a facility in Newfield where we're going to be doing some temporary transferring of materials. We're not going to be able to start the commercial recycling, the dump and bale, and the full drop-off center until about August of next year is what I'm projecting. Any questions? Carol.
Yeah, I trust your judgment on how to handle these things. You know the field. I have some questions about, I want to understand exactly what it is we're promoting and how these various streams intersect with each other. So I'm not quite understanding whether, in fact, we're treating, for example, paper from one source differently from another. So at home, we will be still separating paper.
Anybody that puts out recyclables at the curb, whether it's a small business or whether it's a resident, it will all be mixed together. The reason for that typically is that it makes life easier. There's less litter. There's a lot of reasons that we've talked about as to why it makes sense to do that. And what will happen is, and that's not, the mix is about 30% paper, actually, when all said and done, whereas the commercial recycling, which we currently get some of, and particularly say, Cornell's a perfect example and a lot of businesses, most of that is paper. And so it's pretty easy to pull the minor amounts of containers off that, that's what we call processing, to pull the minor amounts of containers off that load.
So as somebody who's been a proponent of recycling since the 1970s, early 70s, mm-hmm. when we were lone voices out there talking about source separation, and people, I literally remember people saying to me, well, maybe you hippies will touch your garbage and separate it, but the rest of society will never do that. And here we are, and people all have gotten used to putting paper in one container and everything. It does make it easier to be able to put everything else in one mm-hmm. container. Mm-hmm. But the very act of doing that, of having to separate the plastic portion of my packaging from the paper portion of the packaging, makes me think about how am I purchasing? Should I be buying things in bulk? It's too much trouble to be separating, and gets us all thinking about that. So
most people don't think that way.
Going back to being able to dump everything together.
Yeah, most people don't think that way, and we've really looked at this, and that's why this is such a trend in the country. At least we're going to see at least 15% more material. Minimal. I mean, in some places it's 50% more material just from allowing people to put everything in one bin. It's just that simple.
Okay. Well, and then just currently, do we still need to be taking the metal off of all those many envelopes we get from the county?
No.
No, we can throw that all right in.
Yeah, that's a very low percentage of residue.
Thank you. And just one other quick one on the, if you're going to be taking soft cover books and things like that, does that then also discourage people to make sure that they save those things for the friends of the library?
No, we're always going to work on reuse above recycling, and a lot of our promotion is going to be in that direction. What Carol's referring to is there's a sheet in your handout that is, there's a front and a back that describes all of the materials that are now going to be able to be recycled at the facility. We currently do take soft cover books as well. So there was another question.
Well,
when you say now, you mean when we get this going, is that right? Sorry.
Soft cover books are you talking about?
This list. Is this
the list?
That's the list when we actually execute the contract and we get going.
Mm-hmm. Will.
Barbara, thank you very much for this presentation, bringing us up to date. And it is, I think we can all be proud of what this operation has accomplished under your tutelage.
Thank you.
Over the many years. Last winter, I had the occasion to visit your office, and I don't know if anybody's been to Barb's office, but you showed me your trash can, which is about the size of a small popcorn container
bag,
or something like that, and you're very, very serious, even internally, in terms of trying to minimize the waste and be conscious, so that's good. My question is, I hope all these forecasts work out exactly as your plan and we can accomplish all that. What are the risk factors? What kinds of things could send us awry?
Joe definitely tested me out on those kind of questions. The risk of continuing to recycle or the risk with this contract?
Both, actually.
Okay. I just sent Carol her response about the avoided cost of disposal, and I copied the entire legislature. And right now, for every ton that we don't throw away, it saves $27 a ton. Based on conservative estimates that I've pulled together, I believe that we're going to be saving more per ton, which is $35 minimum per ton. The other thing to just make sure you're aware of is that the DEC has just come out with a new document and law. The law is actually being promulgated for a new 10-year solid waste plan that is going to require us to go far and above the 50% recycling and my goal of 75%. Reduction. My goal of 75% is in line with the new statute and the new solid waste plan that, believe me, we're going to be putting together before we turn around in spring of next year. So what I've done, knowing what was coming up, is I delivered an RFP that included all of the key components so that my calculations of how we get to 75% and beyond could be reflected. The risk, what would you say the risk is?
Well,
I don't see that there's a risk with going ahead with recycling in terms of the savings, and I don't see that there's a risk involved in moving ahead with this particular contract the way we're going to structure it. There's no minimum tonnage guarantees, okay, which is a key, so we're not guaranteeing a certain amount of material that they would process, and that would be a big risk.
Yeah, I actually think we're reducing risk a lot.
Yeah.
The biggest risk comes in the capital costs.
That's
like when we built this facility, we were $20 million, and now we're talking about a small fraction of that.
It was $7.4 million.
Right. But it was a much larger risk than now. And also with recycling, as with garbage, there are now a lot of larger facilities that you can take your recycling to. So the risk is generally less in the industry, and our risk is even less because our capital costs are going to be less.
Yeah, I would say that one issue is the future stability of the domestic markets as opposed to the success of the international markets like those in China and India. And there's a lot to be said about that. We don't need to talk about that now. But there's no question with the economic situation recovering over time that I believe that my estimates are very conservative in terms of revenues to be generated and things of that sort.
There's always going to be market risk no matter what we do. Markets will go up and down. There's always going to be some risk. But I think you minimize risk by minimizing your investment.
Pat. Oops, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that I find this very exciting. I think that from everything I'm hearing, it sounds like you've done a terrific job, I'll be very interested to see us move ahead with this and look forward to seeing it come to fruition.
Thank you, Pat. Peter.
I'm starting to understand this. I think this is the third time I've heard this. But there new questions come in my mind. So I'd like to, on this slide, I'd like to talk about, just to see if I understand it right, your bullets here, your six bullets. And I don't know whether this slide was made to be the six bullets that we do now or the six bullets that we'll do after this whole project is up and running.
I could have done a better job, actually, in showing that. So we are currently doing what's called dual stream recycling, containers in one bin and paper in another. We're moving from dual to single stream. We are not doing a specific commercial recycling. We are not doing dump and bale. We're not doing waste diversion. We are doing waste transfer, and we're going to have an improved drop-off center where residents can come and bring materials.
Okay, so now I don't really understand if we're doing we're now doing two single streams, and what's the advantage to us to combining that into one stream? We're asking the people to do the diversion or the separation.
Yeah. Well, what's happened in the communities where this has happened, and it's been statistically proven that people are more inclined to want to do it. It doesn't take up as much space in their kitchen or wherever they're doing it. there's less litter, there's different closed containers that can be provided, and that it just makes life easier. You're not lugging a heavy bin. You can roll a tote. I mean, you know, those are just a few of the things.
Okay,
that
so basically the advantage is for the convenience of our customers. Is that correct? Is it going to the...
Yeah. And the savings involved in the cost of collection as well.
Okay.
And
now,
my understanding is that encourages people to
do it, right.
Yeah,
I understand. I understand that part, but I was a little confused. Now, the third thing I don't really understand is where garbage fits in with all of this. Is that going to be separated also, or will that continue?
So
to
garbage,
go to
anybody that has something to throw away will wind up probably buying a smaller container because they're not going to need a big one with what we're going to have going on here. And they typically, a lot of people put a trash, they use a trash tag to pay for their garbage. That's, we devised a pay-as-you-throw. And that stuff gets picked up by a garbage hauler, loaded onto a truck, and brought either to our facility or to the other transfer station in Newfield, depending on who the hauler is.
And then that stuff, is that separated out, or is
that currently just gets dumped on a truck. It stinks, and it gets brought to a landfill that we happen to use in Waterloo, about an hour away. We don't have a county landfill here.
Okay, so we won't be changing that in this.
No, the only thing that's going to change is that we are actually going to be changing that through waste diversion. Whatever is deemed to be has recycling rich loads, for example, like construction material or, you know, stuff of that nature, probably wouldn't be the load that comes in from your house or my house, but more commercial loads. Basically, what's going to happen is they're going to go through a line, and they're going to be sorted. There'll be 6 to 8 sorters. We are going to have more employees will be hired here, probably 18 to 20 versus 13 or 14 now, and you know, and there's going to be safety provisions. And quite frankly, I'm following the California model in what we're doing here. It's going to be very novel in New York State. They're all very excited at the state level, but this has been going on out west for longer.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
You're very welcome.
All right. Anything else?
Not for today. Stay tuned. Thank you very much,
Barbara and Jonathan. Appreciate the work, and I know a tremendous amount of work has gone into this, and thank you very, very much. As far as my report, let me just get a couple of appointments out of the way. I otherwise will forget. The Civil War Commission appointing Aaron Saxon, George Boyer to that, and Alan Bishop III to the Workforce Investment Board. We already started talking about NYSAC, about the conference this past week, and Peter joined me there. And I thought it was really helpful to have Peter go to the Taxation and Finance Committee meeting on Wednesday. We presented with NYSAC's draft resolution, and usually these things are developed by staff and, I guess, the executive committee and brought to those committees at the conference, and then everybody says, yes, that's fine. And then on Friday morning, they all go, yes, that's fine, and that's it. Well, Peter and I kind of looked at the language on both the property tax cap resolution and the resolution on home rule. And I'm proud to say I think that especially Peter made some significant additions and changes to make the resolutions a little more in line with the kind of philosophy that we've had. For example, on the resolution on the home rule request, and I emailed these to, I think, everybody yesterday, and all the resolutions are in the blue book on top of the mailbox. The resolution had initially been, this is about the resolutions where the state usually has to approve our mortgage recording tax, sales tax increases, those kinds of resolutions. And this year, for the first time, they refused to even consider any of those. So NYSAC has a pretty strong resolution, but the resolve ended up being just about the sales tax extensions. And thanks to Peter, we got that modified to include all requests, all taxes that counties would levy currently requiring state approval. So thanks to Peter for jumping in on that issue. On the property tax cap, we did have a number of conversations about this. And duly, in response to your phone call, I have called Steve Aquario today, left a message, the director of NYSEC. The signals I've gotten, I was at a meeting on Thursday of county chairs and county executives and county administrators, where they sort of laid out the kind of campaign they're going to go on to try to attack the property tax cap idea, especially without mandate relief. And it seems like the very strong statement at the beginning of the conversation is we agree with the property tax cap. And when Steve Aquario said that, I was like, what? but then they go on to talk about the mandates and how difficult and how, you know, that. So I think that there needs to be a shift in emphasis, and I think that's what the kinds of things that we've talked about, that really that the whole point of the problem here is the level of, you know, what counties do to deliver state services. And NYSEC is focusing on 9 main mandates, Medicaid just being one of them. And Steve handed out some information, PowerPoint, and we'll share that with you all. But, you know, Medicaid, the average Medicaid expenditure by counties is 45% of their property tax levy. So ours is 29% of our property tax levy. We're in good shape compared to many counties. The average around the state is 45%. And basically, looking at all the 9 mandates, on average 90% of the property taxes levied go to 9 mandates by the state. So this is something where they've got the data, put this together. So I think the emphasis, if the emphasis is on focusing on the mandates, and really if the state makes a decision about a program, the state should pay for it. That should really be the message. And I hope that we don't get in a fight about whether somebody who's indigent should have an attorney, because that's obviously one of the mandates, or whether, what the eligibility level for Medicaid should be. If that's a state decision, the state should pay for it. So I think that will be I hope that'll be the message going forward. Lieutenant Governor Ravitch issued a report. It was in the news yesterday this morning. Joe sent me the report itself, and that, thanks very much for that. Well, did you send that to everybody?
No. Okay. I think I just sent it to you and Frank.
Okay. We should forward that. And I was encouraged by, the article in the Journal mentioned that, he's looked at Medicaid, the whole system, and it's about time somebody did. And it seems that among the proposals is that the state should assume the Medicaid functions now done by counties, and state officials should plan for a full fiscal takeover of Medicaid. Now, within state budget constraints is the little qualifier. But I'm hoping that's really a point that we can push on. I sent everybody a copy from the National Association of Counties of a report on Medicaid. I sent you all that yesterday. New York is not the only state. We've sort of gotten used to saying New York's the only state or one of the few states that has any local share. Well, I've learned that that's not true. There are 26 states where there is a county share. We are, however, by far much more dependent on counties to pay for these services than any other state. You know, that's what I would like to do is really, I'm part of this Medicaid commission, which is trying to finalize its work. I'd like to just make our position be to look, other states, have the states pay a bigger share or most of the share for Medicaid. New York should be able to do the same as other states. So that's certainly the push that we have going forward. And I agree that the just an arbitrary cap is simply going to cripple us. Pam?
Well, you partially answered my question, because at some
at one point I had heard either NYSEG or somebody talking about, well, we would ask the state not to hand off any more unfunded mandates from this point on. And, I mean, I think we absolutely need relief from the unfunded mandates that we have. And so I'm hoping that that's the direction that you're going in, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Good. Peter.
Yeah, I went to a different meeting at the at NYSEC at one point, and I went to a meeting on Medicaid, on the finances of Medicaid and comparative to other states. And it's important to realize that what New York spends on Medicaid is much higher than the average. It's the highest in the nation, and the question is why? What is it that we do? Is it inefficiency in the way we deliver it, or what? Or is it that we have a needier population? And the answer to that is no, it's none of those things. It's that we have a much more generous cutting line for being on Medicaid. One-third of the residents in New York are on Medicaid. And it's 150% of the poverty level is where you get to be on Medicaid. And that simply does not happen anywhere else in the union. And I think we have to understand that's probably why it is that there's been a shift to the counties, because New York has decided to have this generous program, and therefore, you know, everybody more or less has the same kind of funds that states get and counties get and so forth. And New York finds it difficult in its highest level to provide the funds for providing this service. So I'm not taking any position, but that was not clear to me before I went there. So,
Brian, Carol, and Nathan.
I still haven't heard anything from my question from 45 minutes ago regarding why is New York City exempt from these proposals, from these tax cap proposals.
I don't know, but that's all I'm going to ask about when I get to talk to Steve Aquario. I mean, I don't know. It's a really good question. Does anybody have the answer to that?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Simply, the legislature is controlled by New York City and Westchester County and those areas, and they can get themselves exempt and then pass the tax cap to everyone north of the George Washington Bridge. I mean, it's okay.
Brian, back to you.
I was hoping for a scientific answer. I'm aware of that answer.
We're in New York State, dude.
Sorry, my mistake.
Yeah, but David has some actual information. That sounds
okay.
Well,
There's the mic.
New York City has an income tax. And therefore, they levy almost a minuscule residential property tax. You talk to anybody who lives in the five boroughs, and the property tax comes from commercial buildings, not from residents, because they rely on income tax and the city income tax, plus, you know, they have very high user fees also. And they're not subject to the same request of the legislature in most instances.
Is that true of school funding too, David?
In school funding particularly, because they're not supporting their school system from property taxes.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. See, I had Carol, Nathan, Mike, and then Peter. You had your hand up, Mike?
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Sort of, but David pretty much said what I was going to say.
Okay. Carol.
Back to the Medicaid and the relationship. I have a question about whether there is a relationship between the high percentage of people in New York on Medicaid and the ability to get private health insurance here. The same daughter whose income taxes I've helped fill out in the last few years, who we don't want that income tax rate that she has to pay in New York City added to our taxes, unless we really get to spend it here. of my four children who went off of my family health care, they were in four different states. And the New York State child, in looking for a private health plan, they were either non-existent, they didn't cover what the other states did, or they only allowed you to cover at very high levels, and they were literally six times the cost. We could get a basic policy for the kids in other states for about $100 a month, and this was going to be $600 a month. So I'm wondering if there is a relationship between whatever insurance policy is set by New York State or just the way that the insurance companies are either allowed or do function here and the high numbers of people we have on Medicaid.
Well, we have a very high poverty rate statewide.
That too, but...
Yeah, so that's one part of it. And when I've looked, I understand what you're saying, Peter, and that's the idea that we have Cadillac services is certainly a line that a lot of people offer. But I think when you look at, and I think they need to be looked at, but I think they're certainly, in the same way that we fund a lot of things on a preventive basis, some of the programs that we're going to be slashing, if we accept Joe's budget, they're preventive services that save costs down the line. In fact, I was looking at the list. Podiatry is covered for Medicaid patients. Well, I said to, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was to Patricia Carey, I said, you know, is that really needed? She said, well, if a diabetic can't go to the podiatrist and then they end up losing a limb if they are not cared for. So there is at least two sides to every story is kind of what I would say very briefly, but certainly the program has to be examined. Nathan?
Yeah, but the key thing to remember about Medicaid in New York State is it's not because of people without health insurance. That's not the main issue. I mean, in fact, the 150% that you're talking about will be across the country once health care reform is fully implemented.
Right.
But the thing about New York State is that New York State has generous benefits for the elderly. That's what makes New York State's program especially expensive. So if you were to look at New York State's like cost per adjusted hospital admission, it's about $10,667. The average in the United States, $9,309. So there isn't a huge difference there. But the amount of Medicaid expenditures per beneficiary for elderly people in New York State, we spend $26,384 for elderly people that are Medicaid beneficiaries. Adults that are in Medicaid only cost us $3,953. So that the bulk of your costs are actually from people that have, you know, spent down their assets and now are relying on the Medicaid program to support them.
In nursing homes.
In nursing homes, yes. That's the bulk of the cost.
Right.
Why higher in New York, though?
Because we offer those benefits. If you go to places like, I think South Carolina is one example that we used to talk about in grad school. They don't have anywhere near the benefits for the elderly. That's why, surprisingly, you see a lot of people come back to New York State when they get to a certain point in their lives. They may leave New York State when they're in their late 50s and early 60s to go to South Carolina and retire, but then you find them coming back when they're 75, 80 years old. The reason why is that you can't get the same kind of service that you can in South Carolina. You can get it, though, in New York State because of the generous benefits that Medicaid provides.
Mike, did you want to take your turn?
No, I'll pass. I think it's been said.
All right, Peter?
Well, I'm a little bit nervous arguing with an expert, but I wanted to say that something I had heard at that meeting, which does implicitly disagree with what you said, and answering something that Martha said, is that another thing that came up is the notion, okay, there's the income level was one, and another thing that's commonly said the person giving the presentation, that Medicaid has a list of things that a state can choose to provide. I don't know what the things are. I'm making the numbers up, okay? But there are 20 things, and New York provides 18 of them, and the average in the country is to provide 15 of them.
Yes.
And the guy that giving the presentation, actually, I asked him, I said, could you give us a list of what these things are that New York is providing that other people aren't? And he said, it doesn't really matter. It's not a lot of money. That the difference between providing 15 of them and providing 18 of them was not a big driver. So that's what I heard. Okay.
Right. Probably from a health care perspective. Yeah.
Well, whatever. Okay.
But not from elder care. That's the difference. It's a difference between health care and elder care.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's the difference.
The other thing I wanted to say is this business about the difference between New York City and us. I sort of understood what David had said, but I have on several occasions been, maybe others of you have, been constituents have complained to me about our real estate taxes, and two or three have said to me, you know, I owned a place in New York City, and you can't believe I was paying $700 a year in taxes, and here I come because I thought everything was more expensive in New York City, and here I'm paying $4,000. This is crazy. What are you doing? And I got to understand that's what we're doing, is that they don't rely on, because they have an income tax, then they don't rely on the property tax. So that's why people don't care much about the cap in New York City.
So this shall certainly be continued, and I feel that it's really time, and I certainly hope that the report that the Medicaid Commission will be will complete soon. I hope that the state really works with us on this. I think it was an elegant pivot from everybody being mad about the state budget being late and how dysfunctional Albany was, and the day they finished the session, the last thing they did was to pass the property tax cap. So, boom, suddenly everybody's talking about how it's up to the local governments. That's why your taxes are so high. So, now I will say this wasn't the only thing we talked about at NYSAC. I went to several workshops on economic development and broadband, and a number of exciting things I heard, and I won't take time now, but I will tell you that there was a very interesting presentation by somebody whose business is in site selection and helping companies figure out the best place to locate. And he went through a big spreadsheet about what the drivers are and what are the salient factors when people make these site selection decisions. And in terms of the money, taxes aren't actually the biggest drivers. There are many other issues, and infrastructure, access to workforce are really at least as important. There was another presentation by four entrepreneurs and folks in the corporate world, and they reinforced over and over that the top three reasons for their location decisions were availability of quality and educated workforce, infrastructure, meaning water, sewer, broadband, definitely broadband, and quality of life. So I think we have two of the three, and we're working on the third one. And it was just there was a lot of energy around those issues. So I think there's a lot that can be done. So any other questions? Okay, there's plenty of time on that. And there's lots more material if anybody's interested. Thank you. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thank you, Martha. I have a couple of updates and announcements. And I also will ask you tonight to confirm an appointment that I would like to make for Youth Services Director. I'll do that at the end of my report. In terms of executive session, I'd like to add, I'm not sure we said labor negotiations among the items there. I'd like to add that to the agenda for the executive session and talk to you about that. Jim Dennis will probably issue a reminder as a part of his report about the budget forum that's next Monday night, 7 to 9 at the Borg Warner Room. I suspect that we will have a good crowd for that event. A couple of documents on our side, budget information that we've committed to you should be now beginning to come to you pretty quickly. The updated program impact assessment forms that will have 2011 numbers on them before 2010. We're trying to perfect those right now and get those out before the end of the week so you can look program by program and see what kind of change there has been in the proposed budget. I think our desire would be to get those to you electronically to reduce the amount of printing that we have to do, but if you'd like hard copies, you will call us and we will make that available to you. The request for a list of contracts that historically has been a part of the budget, We're getting that to you in a separate document, I think, tomorrow. Tomorrow you should have that, so we're going to provide that documentation. Things that don't relate to the budget. So good news, as opposed to the budget items. I did want to let you know that our airport manager, Bob Nicholas, has been invited to be a part of a national panel created by the Transportation Research Board of the National Academies that will focus on airport sustainability. This panel will be reviewing research proposals and research projects, all under the umbrella of sustainability for airports, looking at benchmarks, metrics, and so forth. This is a real honor, I think, for our county. It recognizes what we've done in terms of incorporating green into airport planning, which is something that hadn't been done before. We have the first green master plan in an airport, I believe, in the entire country. So it's a real honor for our county and especially for our airport manager who's helped guide us into that, along with, of course, Ed Marks, who's been very much a part of it. But I did want to let you know this bit of good news and a real measure of respect for what we're doing here in the appointment of Bob Nicholas to this national panel. With respect to the appointment that I would like to ask you to consider confirming tonight, it's the Youth Services Director position. This is not a surprise announcement in terms of a vacancy being created. Nancy Zaylor announced many months ago that this fall she plans to retire. And the search process for her replacement began shortly after she let us know in the early spring of her plans to retire. This is a civil service post, so the first step in the process was to issue a test and for that process to run its course. And then that was followed by the establishment of a search committee that looked at prospective candidates for that job. Search committee included representatives of the Youth Board, State Division for Youth had its regional representative on the committee, Human Service Cabinet had a representative, Patricia Carey, Personnel. This legislature had two seats on that search committee. And I think as the result of that, we found ourselves an excellent candidate for that position, whose name is Amy Hendricks. Based on the recommendation of the search committee, I'd like to appoint Ms. Hendricks to the director's position. As you all know, that appointment is subject to your confirmation. I'm going to seek that confirmation tonight. I hope you all receive the email that I sent out in the latter part of next week with a resume and my recommendation on there. If you looked at the resume that was included in the email, you'd see that Ms. Hendricks is currently the Community Partnership Director for the American Lung Association in New York. Her focus there has been on anti-smoking programs, and as a part of that, her experience has been working with volunteers, stakeholders, community partners, a lot of them, on projects and ushering those groups into policies and programs and getting things done. And I think she's had a great experience there. Before that, she was the Youth Action Coordinator for the Huther Doyle Memorial Institute. I had to look that up. That is a not-for-profit addiction and recovery agency in Rochester. She began her career and spent several years as the Senior Assistant and Director of Youth Programming, the American Red Cross of the Finger Lakes, which is based in Seneca Falls. She has a Bachelor's of Fine Arts from Niagara University. She has a Master's in Strategic Leadership from Roberts Wesleyan College. Beyond what you can read on the resume, I think if you were to meet her, and several of you have, you would find her to be very bright, very engaged, very energetic, and very passionate about improving the lives of young people. That really separated her from the pack. And I think we have an excellent candidate. Frank Proto was interested because she grew up on a farm in Ovid, New York, so she understands rural youth as well as urban youth, so she does have that experience. And again, it's a civil service process. Eligible candidates were drawn from that list. So based on the recommendations of the search committee, I also briefed Health and Human Services at its last meeting on the appointment and received their approval to bring this to you for confirmation. I would like to ask for your confirmation of the appointment of Amy Hendricks to the position of Youth Services Director. If you do confirm, Ms. Hendricks would be able to come on board on or about October 20th. And she has indicated that if she is confirmed, she will accept the appointment. She currently lives outside the county. She understands that she would need to live inside the county.
Frank.
Madam Chair, I think I'd like to add that the Health and Human Services Committee, as Joe mentioned, did endorse Joe's selection, and I'd like to move the appointment as you've heard it this evening.
Thank you, Frank. Dave, is that a second? Great, that's a second. Are there any questions or discussions? Dooley?
Is this an appointment of a certain term, or is it without limit?
It's without limit.
She serves at your pleasure?
Yes.
Carol?
I assume she has knowledge of the changes in the budget that are being recommended for the upcoming year?
No, we wanted her to come, Carol.
Well, I understand. I just want to make sure there's still a budget for her to manage, or that she knows that that you know the relative size compared to what it's been in the past that you are proposing.
She's aware of the significance of the change. In fact, one thing that I talked to her when I interviewed was kind of how she would react to something like that, how she would, regardless of the outcome, if the outcome is the restoration of funds, how she would handle that, if the outcome is the loss of funds, what she would do to re-energize her staff and really get things back on a productive track. I was very impressed by her answer. So she's aware generally of the significant cut. I'm not sure that she has a specific knowledge of where that cut occurred.
We're not luring her here under false pretenses.
I mean, that was a good question. I didn't mean to be flip. Leslie, did you have your hand up?
I did. Joe, can you refresh my memory and give me a synopsis of how many candidates applied for this position and how many were in your final?
Well, there were 27 that passed the tests. We ultimately interviewed six of those 27. So, again, it was from that pool of six that were interviewed that the final recommendation was made.
And can you tell me a little bit more about the breakdown of candidates in terms of diversity?
One of the six candidates interviewed was an African-American male. I think the rest were all Caucasian, two male, the balance female.
Thank you.
Are ready to vote? All in favor of confirming the appointment of Amy Hendricks, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Joe. And we look forward to sort of an itinerary of welcome events and that kind of thing. So, all right, great. Thank you very much. County Attorney, Jonathan?
I don't have a report. I'd want to let people know that the executive session on the real estate is probably going to be more than a few minutes. So, you know, if that makes any difference in people's planning.
Come on, everybody. Let's go.
Well, I know that one member has to leave early so that we have, she has surgery tomorrow. So if we can move along, that would see if we how far we can get. Thank you, Jonathan. David, Finance Director.
Man, you made me excited, though. You talked about attending a Taxation and Finance Committee meeting. Boy, that got me going.
It wasn't that great.
That's what it takes.
But I put on your desk the latest sales tax report. You know, and right now it shows that we're 6% over last year, and the budget presumed a growth of about 3.25%. It's good news. I mean, I think that... this time next month, we'll get the third month of the quarter, and we'll be in a position really to hopefully not have to concern ourselves with the sales tax that's projected for next year, because we need a sound basis for next year's projection, and we're certainly exceeding that right now. And also, you might have seen the notice in today's paper that there is some economic stimulus going out today. The sheriff's unit got their retro payments. And so hopefully that will result in some boost in our economy. I have to say, though, that, I mean, it's really, you know, thank you again and again for getting us this new payroll system, because to do this retro payment required 120, each individual had 120 payroll cycles
of manual calculations that had to be inserted into spreadsheets in order to do a retro calculation because the payroll system that we have now doesn't do that. And each individual got a packet about 12 pages thick detailing those each cycle's adjustments. Another piece of good news is we did a financing last week to finance Ellis Hollow Road and the remaining portion of the CAD mobile data project. And while we had the lowest rate for 12 months of any upstate county, the last financing we did, this time the rate was 0.68%, which is almost double the rate we had last time. It was 0.37%, which was a good rate. I was disappointed because I predicted we would get a rate of 0.58. But 6.8 is still well below what the going rate is for comparable financing terms. It's just that it was disappointing and considered that we got a 0.37 rate for 365 days and we got a 0.69% for 111 days. And there's been no indication that interest rates in the market have really changed dramatically. So I'm hoping to recover in December when we refinance about $17 or $18 million of bonds, and we'll pick up some savings there.
Any questions for David? Thank you very much. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, we have the consent agenda. If there's anything that you would like to have pulled, please say so. Resolution A, budget adjustment, emergency response. Resolution B, authorization to accept Homeland Security grants, Sheriff's Office and Department of Emergency Response. Resolution C, authorization to execute a contract with Clough Harbor Associates, LLP for design services, covered bridge preservation project, Town of Newfield. And Resolution D, authorization to execute extensions of snow and ice agreements with the towns in Tompkins County. And two appointments to the Planning Advisory Board, Kathleen Schlaughter and David Kay. I have a motion on the consent. Dooley and a second from Pat. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Those are unanimous. Thank you. I would like to move some committee reports and resolutions around a little bit to let Lee go home. I think he's probably not here for everything. So, Nathan, what? Well, we got a couple more under public safety. Those aren't you. Okay. All right. Well, while we're here, Nathan, go ahead with public safety.
All right. I have no report since we haven't had a meeting since the last legislature meeting. And so I have Resolution F, Appropriation Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice, and I so move.
There's a second. Less than seconds. Any discussion? This is a short-form roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous.
Next, I have Resolution G, Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Replacement Pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice.
Also, less than second that. Dooley.
I wonder if there was any wording change.
If there were any wording changes from when it was discussed at budget?
From what
or when it was?
If not, I'd like to ask.
Okay.
That in the second whereas, this is Resolution G, correct?
Yes, it is.
The fiscal policy of Tompkins County allows for replacement pay to the department from the contingent fund for the period beyond the initial 2 months.
For the period beyond the initial 2 months.
If that extended description could be included.
That's friendly.
That's fine. Okay. All right. Anything else on this one? Another short form roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? Thank you. That's unanimous as well.
All right. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Great. Just in case we might pick up Ed here, Pam, do you want to take your report?
Well, I don't have a report. We haven't met since the last time, but I would like to move the resolution E, supporting intermunicipal cell tower initiative. I so move.
Is there a second? Pat seconds that. Discussion. All right, all in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Is that it, Pam?
Yes, our next meeting is October 6th.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then I'll go to capital plan review. I don't think I could be quite that fast, but we met on September 9th. We had a good discussion on options for the Office for the Aging. We also talked about options for the programs in the old library, and we had passed resolution at this body before about tasking staff to look for alternative spaces for Community Justice Center and records management. Patricia Carey came to us and pointed out that family treatment the family treatment program is actually really a separate program from community justice and has different needs and concerns. So she actually felt that the family treatment court might have a significant interest in where that program moves, if it moves out of the old library. So she was going to be talking to Judge Rowley about that. Just in, you know, maybe there's an option that the judge can help with. So we had discussion of specifically what kinds of spaces staff should be looking for, what the needs were. We also had an update from Arel on several space studies that have been going on, none of which were quite ready yet, with studies of the mental health building, the human services building, and the courthouse. Arel's been part of the development of the courthouse space study with, I would say, a significant role in negotiating what the results of that may be. I mean, I think the initial results were that basically the state court system needed every square inch of this building. And Arel is kind of working on whittling that down with them. So we expect to have a program report out of that, from that study at our next committee meeting, and then estimate of costs at the meeting following in November. So that's report on capital plan review. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Gio, Mike?
We met on September 16th. Had a discussion about a lot of different items. We heard from our county administrator, and who assured us that he's been working on things other than the budget, which we're glad to know about, of course. He reported on his discussions with department heads about workforce flexibility. I'm sure we'll hear more about that. Also, the how lean training initiative is going on for the county departments. There are three model programs, as you remember, and we're expecting reports of those toward the end of the month. Joe told us that one of the problems with the budgeting system is a lot of the rote work that's necessary, handwork and calculations and things, and he wants to look into, after the budget process is through, how we can do more of that electronically with such things as perhaps with this new budget program that finance has, and it might be a feature of that that might be useful and take some of the, give more time to worry about the planning rather than the figures. We talked for a while with Marsha Lynch and Jim Blizzard and Public Information regarding connectivity for broadcasting from county buildings. That's an issue that we're kind of interested in, particularly came up when we realized that we're about to have our budget forum later this month from the Board Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library, which is an excellent facility, but we have no way of broadcasting live out on the educational access network from that building. There's also other county buildings, the new health department building, for example, that would have no way of broadcasting out. So we've asked them to look into this issue with Time Warner and also and come back to us and talk about what kinds of things might be necessary to be able to do that. Also, we talked about the special broadband committee that you've appointed now, Martha, and the efforts that are being made to solicit volunteers for that committee. And we didn't have any resolutions, so that's pretty much it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mike? Let me just remind people. Pat, go ahead.
You're probably going to say the same thing.
You go ahead.
Just in relation to the budget forum, I should have thought to say this earlier on, but there is a budget forum is coming Monday the 27th from 7 to 9 at the Borg Warner Room. So that is open for the public. We invite people to come to comment on the proposed budget.
Thank you, Pat. I was going to say that applications for that broadband committee, we're really looking for folks to apply by October 1st, and they can call the county office 274-5434 or email Michelle Potteroff for the application. Carol?
Yeah, Mike, I don't quite remember the whole discussion, but there was something about whether we could do something lower tech to on a temporary basis to make the Borg Warner Room.
I think there was some discussion about streaming on the internet to folks, but the quality of the signal I think is much inferior to what would be able to be broadcast through the cable television system.
Right, but that if anybody wanted to volunteer assistance. If Nathan has any of his friends who know how to easily set up just a lower tech or video camera and can get the signal over to here, to this room.
Well, we do intend to tape this, and we can then put it on public, or rather educational, government access after that, but we won't be able to broadcast live.
Live. Okay. Thank you for refreshing my memory.
Pat.
And in regards to the broadband committee, that application is also available on the county website.
Right. Thank you. And in case anybody hasn't seen the press release from Marsha Lynch, I did ask Pat to chair that committee, and she graciously agreed. So thank you very much. Jim Dennis, Budget and Capital Committee.
I was going to mention that there's a budget forum at the Johnson County Public Library Monday, but everyone here mentioned, including three people who came during the public part of the meeting, so I'm not going to mention that again. We had a short budget meeting here tonight and passed the budget committee and passed three resolutions that were passed under. Did our part of the resolution were passed under public safety. I will announce that no one else has. We have an expanded budget committee meeting tomorrow at 4 p.m., and that concludes my report.
Carol,
I don't know why someone didn't help me. What?
Can I wanted you to get here to really. Supply some information that everybody in the world else hasn't supplied about the budget forum, which is the format for it, the amount of time people will have. Have we worked out that?
And what, how much we'll last year, and what we're going to do, I believe, is the now famous county administrator's PowerPoint will be shown at the beginning, and then we will open it up for questions, I believe, and I will be the one with doing that. We'll set up the room. And I think it went pretty well last year. I know that there were going to be many more interested people there this year than last year. And we're going to have a portion of the room so that people can lean their placards up against the wall and they won't be ruined. So I expect that we'll have some people who want to find out what we're doing. But that's going to be the format. Joe, and then I will open it up to questions. And legislators will be positioned, I believe, in the front of the room. No, they're not. But those of you who come, obviously, will be able to answer questions also.
If there's a time limit for people speaking to us, might want to let them know that
I
ahead of time.
Marcia, do you want to go to the microphone?
And unless there's any more questions, that would be
The time limit, as we've done in the past, will be 3 minutes, as it is here, with addressing the legislature. And people will also have the option of submitting written comments, as we've done in the past.
Right. Nathan?
I was looking back. I filmed that the last one on my iPhone, Joe's presentation, and I looked at the audience and everything. And that was, that room was pretty. There was a lot of people at the at last year's budget forum. So, considering the gravity of this year's budget forum, I would expect that we should be prepared for overflow, because it could be quite big.
I guess we've already set up what room it's going to be in, so it is what it is.
I mean, there was a lot of people there. Really was
Frank and then Dewar.
Marcia, I would urge you to make sure there's a workable, at least one workable microphone, and that we ran into some difficulties with the TCAT presentation because we couldn't hear some of the people, and perhaps even two of them so they can float through the audience. Thanks.
Julie?
Is there a time when the forum is going to end, no matter how many people are there?
Yes. It's scheduled 7 to 9.
So if there are still people wanting to be heard, will we accommodate them some other way, some other time?
Well, I think you're going to have to let us use our judgment. If there's a couple of people at the end and they have not been heard, then I would extend it past the 9 o'clock. If there are 20 people past not been heard, then no, I would not do that. But we would then have to look for some other time to, you know, have part two of the forum.
Okay.
I think we run into some issues with the library, too.
Yes. I guess it's pleased is the right word to say publicly that there is no longer a conflict with the League of Women Voters' scheduled meeting on redistricting that night, because they have canceled that and will reschedule it. So everyone can come to the budget forum, although that's not why they canceled it.
I've been telling people also that we have every legislature meeting between now and when we pass the budget, Tuesday, first and third Tuesday at 5:30. I mean, we've already had some stranger comments. We've already had comments from the public. So there are many ways for people to be involved. And then the public hearing is November, what, 3rd?
The first Tuesday.
First Wednesday, yes. November 3rd, at 7 o'clock in this room, is the public hearing.
Let me just, Nathan passes to me. Tomorrow night, Soil and Water Conservation, Finance, County Attorney, Emergency Response, Highway, and Facilities.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, last night being Claiborne.
We will meet tomorrow.
Short and sweet. All right. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services.
I can say a whole lot more.
Health and Human Services, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The committee met on the 8th. You heard one item of business already, the confirmation of Joe's appointment regarding youth services. We had an update from Lisa regarding the complete streets report. County Office of the Aging. And then we had a distribution of information in numbers from the 211 program. That's the one that is able to help folks out throughout the county with answering questions and directing people. The bulk of the meeting was taken up with, as you might suspect, hearing from at least two people regarding the, and perhaps three, regarding the cut in the rural youth programs that had been proposed. Nancy Zeller had brought two individuals with her, and then Ken Slaughter weighed in on that as well. The next committee meeting is the 13th of October. Just a reminder, and I'm sorry, I apologize, I don't have my invitation in front of me, but I believe it's the 29th. The youth services group are having their luncheon And if someone has that information, could they, Pat, do you, can you say it out loud?
12 to 1:30 at the Ramada on the 29th.
1:30 at the Ramada?
12 to 1:30.
12 to 1:30. When and where do you have to respond in order to confirm?
I don't have that with me. Sorry.
As of yesterday, I'm sure they'd still be very happy to get the response, and it's from Teresa Albert. I can give you that phone number.
Okay. Thank you.
And I thank you for mentioning that, because I think, especially this year, it would be very, very good for many members of the legislature to be there to show support for the department and all the work that Nancy has done. And I'll be going.
Thank you very much.
If you can make it, please come. Thank you. Thanks, Martha.
And you have Resolution H.
Resolution H, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, health department. And I'd like to move that.
Is there a second? Will seconds that. Any discussion? Short form roll call. Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you, Frank.
You bet.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee Chair, Chair Julie Keeper.
There has been no meeting since the last legislative meeting of the F&I Committee. I hope you all received an electronic copy of information about the snow and ice control program in the county that Bill Sesney sent out in response to some of Carol's concerns. I thought it was useful and clear. And the next meeting of the committee is on October 1st.
Thank you, Julie. Mike?
Julie, this morning on the news, I heard the mayor of the village of Lansing, Don Hartel, speaking unkindly of our public safety building and a problem that's apparently there having to do with the sewer plugging up. I haven't heard anything talked about at the Facilities Committee or otherwise. Do you know anything more about that?
It was a surprise to me. After I heard that on the radio this morning, I called Don and learned that this has been an intermittent problem for a period of years now. And when the village expresses concern, it stops for a while, and then it resumes. And the problem is presumably because objects get put into the toilets that are in the individual cells, objects that shouldn't be flushed down the toilet. And so that leads to blockage in the system, and businesses and apartment buildings downhill will get backing up of their flow. So I did some more investigation about possible remedies, and I have that information, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Joe or anyone else about it yet, but there are ways to deal with this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for asking that question, Mike. I felt it was unusual to hear of something like that on the news for the first time. Leslie?
Agreed. Very much so. I just want to add from the Air Service Board, I'm sure you all might have heard of the Continental Delta merger. United Continental merger. So as of October 1st, at the Air Service Board meeting, the name will be United. However, we do want to reassure everyone that as the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport has been doing very well in terms of its passenger enplanements or its courtesy, its everything else, that we will continue to do well and perhaps even better with this new merger of airlines. So look out, come October 1st, the name will be United. But flights will continue and probably increase. Who knows? But it will continue to be good service to the public. So we just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you, Leslie. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, I'd like to, if you don't mind, bypass you for a moment and recognize Arel, who is sitting in back of you. We had the health the health committee, Health and Human Services Committee meeting at the new health facility by the airport. And I want to tell you, Earl, we had a wonderful tour. If anything, the chairs in the conference room provide an opportunity for Olympic-style competition. The building, we had to hold Jim Dennis down because he was challenging everyone. But the building, you know, there's some tweaks that have to, like everything else, but it does look very nice. So take a bow. And anyone on your staff should as well.
And before I ask Will to piggyback on that, I was there about a week and a half ago, and the staff kept saying things like, "We've died and gone to heaven." I mean, they are just thrilled. So they really appreciate the space and are very happy about that. Thank you, Will.
And in fact, I was going to say much the same thing. Thank you. I kept looking, Harrell, for the tiles, waiting for them, wondering if they would start popping up. They didn't. But then I realized they had, in fact, taken on another more evil characteristic, which are very, very slick. And presumably you're doing something to make that a little less perilous in the Rice conference room, where we will be, I'm sure, spending...
Oh, wait a minute. What, you mean to say we're not going to be able to zip those chairs around like we did at the meeting?
Now, I know this was Dooley's report. Is there anything else, Dooley?
I'm sorry, Dooley.
All right.
Let me just add that we're hoping, Joe mentioned the Green Master Plan, and the kudos to Bob. We are really doing well at our airport, y'all. So when you see Bob or send him an email, really give him lots and lots of kudos. But our hope is that the committee that's working on the Green Master Plan, that will have a draft by the end of the year, and looking to present to this legislature so that we can keep you up to date on what's going on. If not, it'll be the beginning of the year, because it's really looking good.
That's great. That sounds terrific. Thanks, Leslie. Carol?
I have a question about the airline mergers. Isn't there a relationship between U.S. Air and United?
They both start with U.
As the VP of U.S. Air, I do not know.
I don't know, Carol. I have no idea.
All right. We do not have minutes of the previous meeting this time. I would mention that under unfinished business, the ad hoc committee on the resolution about the property tax cap will meet after this legislature.
No, that's already met. It met before this meeting.
Oh, okay. That's done then. Okay.
Done.
All right. Thank you very much. And I believe the proper way for that to come back to us would be under unfinished business next meeting. Okay. So. Yes, Frank.
Martha, I had one item under unfinished business also.
Sure.
It was regarding the minutes of two meetings back. Kathy and I went over them, and I just, for clarity, there was a date, an incorrect date, in the portion regarding the NYSAC conference, that part of the conference that I went to regarding the Empire Field Days up in Seneca Falls, and I'd like your permission to at least correct that. It's not substantive, but the date was incorrect.
Sounds like a manifest error to me, or
oh, yeah.
Close enough. So, okay. All right. Any other questions? Dooley.
I guess you asked me if I had anything else to say. I forgot to say that in Resolution C, which was on the consent agenda tonight, there is what Kathy deemed to be a manifest error. The final resolve says that the highway manager is being authorized to execute the supplemental agreement.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can I get a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of real estate negotiations and labor negotiations? Jim and Nathan, all in favor? Please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right. We have a...
Do we expect action to come out of that meeting?
No, at this time we don't expect action to come out, so that would be the end of the meeting. Let us come back here at 7:15, so a 7-minute break while they shut down the cameras. Thank you very much.